Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bo. This week, Rabbi Mike Feuer discusses Bo. Rabbi Mike Feuer is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mike Feuer.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parshat Bo, marks several fundamental transitions in the history of Am Yisrael, and in many respects, in the nature of God's relationship to creation. Now, the first transition is the explosion of mitzvot, of commandments, that appears in our parsha. The Sefer HaChinuch, the classic work by the Rishon that lists the mitzvot according to their placement in the parshiot, marks only three mitzvot, three commandments in the entire book of Genesis. I'll give you one guess what they are. It's Pru Urvu, be fruitful and multiply, Brit Milah, the mitzvah of circumcision, and Gid Hanasheh, the commandment not to eat the sciatic nerve that lies in the thigh of an animal. Now, these are all fundamentals. Purvu is obvious. Without reproduction, there is no humanity. Brit Milah, the circumcision, represents the partnership to which we're called in creation, that we are co-creators in bringing the world to its completion. You know, and Gid Hanasheh always appears to be a bit of a mystery. But the Sefer HaChinuch says that this mitzvah, which is a result of Yaakov's struggle with the angel before his fateful meeting with his brother Esav way back in Parshat Vayishlach, this comes to teach us that despite all of the struggles that we'll experience in exile and the suffering that we'll receive at the hands of the nations, that we will not cease, that we will never disappear. And that hope will be a pillar of emuna, of faith. So this is really the commandment to believe in spite the difficulty. But these are the only three that appear in the entire book of Genesis. And then in our Parsha Bo, we find 20 new mitzvot. It's a veritable explosion of commandments. And one is just forced to ask, what's the nature of this new path of divine service we're called to, this intense focus on detailed behavior, which apparently is expressive of a new relationship between God and Am Yisrael and creation? Once again, the Sefer HaChinuch engages this question when he tries to explain the reasons why one of the details of the commandment in eating the Korban Pesach, the Paschal offering, is not to break any of the bones. And he says, you know what, you shouldn't be bothered by the repetitive nature of all of the commandments which come to remind us of the miracle of leaving Egypt. Because, like, maybe you might think, look, just give me one commandment, eat a kid once a year on this day, and that's it. Isn't it enough to have one remembrance? He says, that's simply not the way we work, right? Because it's a childish conception of the world to think that you can mark something once and it will change your life. He says, in fact, we understand that a person is affected according to their actions. He says, Adam nifal kafi p'ulotav, right? And their heart and their thoughts are always drawn after action. Right? And that which you do shapes who you are. And in many ways, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, this is the nature of the transition we're seeing in this explosion of commandments, that God is coming as an educator to teach us that if we really want to understand the significance of the Exodus and the new nature of the divine relationship to the world which it represents, then we need to indicate it through our actions. It's not enough to think about the Exodus, to think about freedom. There must be actions which can cause us to be people who know. The second transition that we find is in the nature of the first commandment which appears in our parsha, and that's the sanctification of the new moon. Right? God takes Moshe and he points out the moon, and the Midrash says in a very dramatic and enigmatic description that God himself points at the moon and says to Moshe, right, that this month shall be to you the head of the months. To you it shall be the first of the months of the year. That's in the 12th chapter in the second line of Shemot, of Exodus. Now, it's important to understand this commandment is actually the hinge point of the Jewish calendar, which is a combination of the lunar and solar calendars. A little background, the Muslims have a completely lunar calendar. And this is why their holy month of Ramadan migrates backwards through the seasons, sometimes in the winter, sometimes in the spring and fall and summer. The Christians, on the other hand, have a purely solar calendar. The Jewish calendar, through a complex set of interactions, binds together the solar and lunar. And it is chiefly through the requirement that Pesach be in the spring, that the holiday of Passover always be in the spring, that these two are put together. This is not just a technical combination. This commandment to sanctify the new moon and to keep the sanctification of that moon in the season of spring binds together the cyclical, unending nature of time, which is represented best, of course, by the seasons, winter, spring, summer, fall. It never ends. To bind that together with the linear element of time, which implies a starting point and an ending point. This is why this month is the head of the month, the first of the months of the year. This represents the perspective on time, which teaches that life is more than an unending wheel. It's a journey, one which begins at creation and leads to redemption. And the conscious role which the Jewish people will play in the act of sanctifying the moon. Later, the halacha will develop this into witnesses who see the moon and they run to the Beit Din in Jerusalem and declare the moon and they get tested and then the Beit Din will sanctify the moon. All these actions are a way of imbuing time, not just with the unending cyclical nature, but with the purpose-oriented linear nature, which is redemptive. So the third transition is expressed through the final breaking of Egypt. You know, the last three plagues which appear in our parsha, the locust, the darkness, the death of the firstborn, really leave Egypt crushed and humbled. And Am Yisrael, as the Torah says, leaves biyad rama. We leave with a high hand. And this is the birth of a nation. It's very important, by the way, to hold that image because, you know, we went down as a seed, as these 70 offspring of Yaakov, this little seed, were nurtured in the womb of the strongest physical empire which history has known until this point. And through the travails of the plagues, we're birthed out through the Red Sea, and if you've never noticed the imagery, you should think about that right now, into the wilderness where we will receive our purpose in the Torah. But for now, we're focused on the pangs of that birth, right? And the breaking of Egypt is the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham from the very beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, where I will make you a great nation. The drama is incredible in this fulfillment, along with his promise from the Brit Ben Habitarim, the covenant between the pieces, that the nation which oppresses your children will themselves be judged. But it's not just a fulfillment of the promise to Abraham, who's just one man, no matter how important he may be. This is also meant to weld into human consciousness the reality that God fulfills his promises by acting in history. Just as Rashi explained to us in last week's Parsha at the beginning, that when God says, Ani Hashem, I am the four-lettered name of God, the Yud He, Vav He, that it means Ne'eman L'shalem Schar, right? I am faithful, I am trustworthy to recompense your behavior. I will pay my dues. I will fulfill my promises. You know, these two conceptions, these two elements that God acts in history and that God is trustworthy to recompense, right, are expressive of the depth of the Jewish notion of one God. Because our conception of one God is not the product of scientific observation on the unity of nature, which we would call physics, or a philosophical reflection on the unity of being, which we would call metaphysics. Rather, the Jewish conception of one God is the experience of the moral unity of creation, which we call the will of God. And of course, a will always acts in time, acts in history. The Exodus is the ultimate expression of the unity of God as a moral force which binds together every piece of conscious action into one of meaning. This conception of the unity is embodied in the commandment of fulfillment, which commandment of tefillin, which concludes our parsha. And it shall be a sign upon your hand and for a marker between your eyes, for with a mighty hand did the Lord take us out from Egypt. That's there at the end of the 13th, or the almost the end, the 13th chapter, the 16th line of Shemot. You know, I want you to think about something. The same parshiot, the same portions of the Torah are written on the in the tefillin which one puts on their head and in the ones which they put on their hand. But there's one key difference. The tefillin on the head has four batim, four sections, while the one on the arm only has one. Why is that? I would venture to say, on one level, this is an expression of the nature of God's unity. You know, one can speculate, and you can come up with philosophical, theosophical, Kabbalistic, any type of system you may want. But at its core, God's unity is expressed in the world as a unified will. And therefore, the head may be split, but the hand, the action, is one. And on another level, in really the same way, we as a people remain a people, even with the diversity of opinion that characterizes us at all times in every place. Two Jews, three opinions, after all. However, the message of our history, the message of the Exodus, our unity as a people, is that we must strive for unity in action. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Fuhrer. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.